Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. This week we pick our highlights of the recent Glasgow Film Festival and we review The Invisible Man. And with our amazing blogs and articles, there's no way that we can call Kim Morrison an invisible woman. So welcome back to the show, Kim.
Thank you very much.
And the wrestling mark of the show, who is more John Cena than a gaslighting invisible man, is Dallas King.
You can't see me!
So it's a very rare thing when all three of us are able to see a film together, and that has been the case for The Invisible Man. But all three of us also got the chance to recently attend the Glasgow Film Festival, so we're going to pick our three highlights of the film festival. So Kim, this was your first time covering Glasgow. What was your kind of experience like?
I mean, it was I wasn't there very much, but it was amazing the time that I was there. There was loads of people that I speak to on Twitter all the time that are massive, like, Fright Fest fans. And we went to see a live podcast recording before the Fright Fest openers as well. So it was so nice to, like, just meet loads of people. And I always feel like the horror community, which was the kind of section of people that I was hanging out with, are always super nice, and it was just so nice to speak to people. And yeah, just I've never been to the cinema that I can't remember the name of it, that's terrible, but the ones that the Fright Fest films were showing at, and it was beautiful. It was really nice, and yeah, so it was amazing. I'm hoping that next year I'll be able to get along and actually see more stuff in person.
It was the GFT you would have been in.
Yes,
GFT one.
Thank you. Yeah, it was amazing. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, I think you might have been saying something different if you'd made it to the end of Fright Fest after 2 days of being in the same screen with everyone. But
that's true.
how was your experience, Dallas? You're a seasoned pro at the Glasgow Film Festival. I think you saw the most out of any of us at the festival.
I saw quite a lot. I think I did. I was up and down like a, you know, a yo-yo. I was, yeah, three trips, separate trips. Saw about a dozen films there and a few more on screeners. So, yeah, busy time, tiring time. I'm getting old now. I'm 40 now. So, yeah, it takes its toll, this film festival lifestyle. But, no, I had a great time. What about yourself?
Yeah, it was really good. I would have liked to have gone more. I was really gutted not to have been through in Glasgow for the that live recording that you went to, Kim. The Godzilla film, which they were covering at it, was a film I have strong memories of really loving as a kid. Also had really good action figures as well, which was always helpful as a kid. So I was gutted to have missed that one. It looked like a fantastic show.
Yeah, it was hilarious. It was so good. They're putting out the live recording of it, I believe, this week, probably. And you'll be able to hear me laughing on it because my laugh is incredibly loud. I sound like a witch cackling. I've been to one of their live shows before, and yeah, I can hear myself heavily. So yeah, that's always fun. But yeah, no, you'll be able to hear it in full. It was brilliant. I loved it.
On two podcasts this week, Kim. Two podcasts.
Yeah. Just as a background character in one.
So Kim, what were the kind of your three highlights of the festival?
Mm-hmm. Right, so number three, I'm going to pick one which was one of Dallas's picks for before we went to see them, which was Tammy and the T-Rex, which I had just heard so many people talking about because it was at like Fright Fest and things last year down in London and stuff. And it's just ridiculous. It was a film I'd never heard of before, and Vinegar Syndrome have released the gore cut of it, which originally was a gory film, and they kind of cut it down to be like a family friendly kind of creature feature, like Harry and the Henderson style thing, and then they put all the gore back in. I would love to see the non-gore cut, and because I don't know how there's so much of it, it's just people getting like their heads squished and things. I'd really be interested to see how the story progresses without all the murder. But it was just it's kind of everything you wanted in a film where Paul Walker gets his brain put in a animatronic T-Rex and is still going out with Denise Richards. It was hilarious, and sadly I watched it on a screener. I didn't get the experience of watching it with an audience, but yeah, it was amazing. So my other picks were the two that I saw in person, which were the two Fright Fest openers. So the second one was Synchronic, which is a kind of horror sci-fi story about this drug that people take, and it can make you go back in time, and they sort of discover that because of the way people's brains are made up, like younger people take it, they can go back in time and they can get stuck back in time. And it's sort of one of the main characters as a paramedic, he gets like the last stash of the drug and he sort of uses it as like an experiment to see how it works and where it can take you back in time and what happens with it and things. And it was really interesting. It's weird because this was the first showing of the new director's cut. Apparently if you've seen it before at other festivals, it was a different cut, so it had a different ending and things, so I'm not really sure how it compares, but I thought it was really good. It was like visually stunning and beautiful to look at, but I would be interested to see the original cut. Apparently they went for a more emotional story in this one, so yeah, I'd like to see what the original one was like. And my top choice was Death of a Vlogger, which was the second film at the opening of Glasgow Fright Fest, and the director Graham was actually the guest for the Godzilla podcast as well, so I got to see a lot of him on that night. And it's like a found footage story about a vlogger who Graham plays himself, whose flat's getting haunted, and then they discover that they might have faked the hauntings and then they might actually be real, and then you're not really sure even when you finish if they were real or faked or whatever. It's really scary, and there was loads of good practical effect moments in it that I'm very impressed how they did on such a tight budget and things. And it definitely made getting the megabus home at 2 a.m. from Glasgow a bit more scarier than it might have been usually.
So what about for yourself, Dallas? What were your three highlights of the festival?
Well, one of them is also Tammy and the T-Rex. it's probably my biggest regret is that I was not down in the Glasgow on the night that this screened. I think it was at the CCA, so the seats wouldn't have been the comfiest, but I imagine that a sold-out crowd watching that film for the first time would have been something special, I think. I wrote a review of it, and the only thing I could really liken it to would be like a horror version of like The Room. I mean, it's that kind of thing where it seems so sincere in its filmmaking, but so you're not really sure what exactly they were going for that it just turns out to be hilarious. And I would love to see this film at some point with an audience. I think it'd be fantastic. Second pick would be a Brazilian film called Bacurau, which is coming out in cinemas on Friday and then on Mubi in a couple of weeks. And it sort of plays out like a Brazilian version of The Seven Samurai meets The Hunt, which is a new film which is out this week, which is quite controversial, in that a small Brazilian town is slowly being cut off from the world and then finds out that they're being stalked by a bunch of American tourists who are on some sort of strange gun hunting holiday where they want to kill, you know, human beings. And it sort of plays out kind of like The Seven Samurai, where the town sort of bandy together to show them that it's not going to be as easy as all that to take them all down. And it's a really sort of interesting film. It sort of plays out like a social sort of commentary on, you can read so much into it, like with the deforestation of the rainforest and stuff, how Brazil was being raped and pillaged by outside forces and how they're sort of now deciding they've had enough and things like that. So really sort of good. It sort of in the last sort of half hour, it really sort of cranks up the notches and the horror and the violence. And yeah, it's a really interesting film. It should be interesting to see how it plays in UK cinemas. Hopefully it gets a bit of the sort of Parasite bump, and people will be giving a bit of a more chance to sort of smaller independent foreign language films. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And then my final choice was the surprise film, which turned out to be Promising Young Woman, which stars an incredible Carey Mulligan as a woman who goes out every weekend and basically feigns being drunk so nice guys, help her out, take her back to their place and then try it on, and then she turns the table on them. It's written and directed by Emerald Fennell, who is behind one of the driving forces behind Killing Eve. And between that, Invisible Man and The Nightingale, which I just watched the other day, it's three films in about 10 days which prove that men are just the worst. They're just terrible, and I'm ashamed to be one. So yeah, I think this one is going to be very controversial when it comes out. It wrong-foots you several steps along the way, and I think it's going to be a huge talking point when it comes out late. I think it's around about April it gets a proper UK release, so this is going to be something quite special, I think. What about yourself, Lee? What did you see?
Yeah, so one of mine was a rewatch, but I was so excited to finally see it with an audience. That was The Death of Dick Long. So we've kind of flown the flag a bit for that film on our other podcast, The A24 Project. So it's all about two kind of southern idiots, really, whose best friend dies, and they try to cover up why he died, and, you know, it all kind of goes hilariously wrong. I watched that one on digital originally last year and really enjoyed it. And then getting to watch it with an audience and on a big screen, there were so many little things that I picked up on. I mean, there was even a little thing, for example, where they're going through this town in sort of Alabama, and someone has their what's called lawnmower on a big stick so it can go down a bit of a hill, and people just started laughing away, and it was like, oh, like, it was so good to kind of be in that atmosphere. And I thought the film played so well with like an 11 o'clock in the morning crowd, so it was a real treat to see Death of Dick Long with a crowd. My second choice was a film that I was a total last minute addition for me, and that was Deerskin. So it's about a man who becomes obsessed with owning this designer deerskin jacket of his dreams. He's paid like €7,000 for it, and I'm pretty sure he buys it from Julie Delpy's dad. But this obsession will lead him to turn his back on his humdrum lifestyle as he starts to film and kill people that are wearing other jackets so only he has a jacket on. The film is 77 minutes long, and it also features a starring performance from Adele Hanel, who's kind of making waves at the moment in The Portrait of a Lady on Fire. That is a film that is just so good. I think it's going to be a Picture House release and out in June or July, so definitely one to look forward to there. And I have to join you guys in it, and it's got to be Tammy and the T-Rex. So
3 for 3.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Denise Richards, but I never expected to see her sort of doing a striptease kind of thing for a brain in a jar that was getting visibly turned on by her sort of like striptease. It was such a fun film. I can't believe I'd never heard about it until Dallas mentioned it a few weeks ago. It's absolutely bizarre, and I would love to have watched this one with a crowd and audience as well, but I'm so glad that I got the opportunity to check it out. So yeah, all in all, for me, it was a really pleasant kind of Glasgow Film Festival, and it sounds like it was the same for all of you.
Yeah, I think we need to do a live podcast where we screen Tammy and the T-Rex and do a live commentary with it or something.
Yes.
Absolutely. Sold on that. So another film that we've kind of all, as we touched on earlier, got to see recently was The Invisible Man. So starring Elizabeth Moss and written and directed by Lee Whannell, Cecilia's abusive ex takes his own life and leaves her his fortune. She suspects his death was a hoax, though. As a series of coincidences turn lethal, Cecilia works to prove that she is being haunted by somebody that nobody can see. So I didn't know this film was going to actually even exist until about a month and a half ago. I think you'd mentioned it, Kim, and I was like, oh, they're actually doing that Invisible Man. And I remembered when it was going to be Johnny Depp as the Invisible Man. So I was a bit thrown off by this film even existing. But I imagine for you two, being sort of the horror geeks that you are, you kind of saw this film coming much closer than I did. So, Kim, what was your sort of expectations going into The Invisible Man? And what was your kind of initial reaction?
I remember seeing the trailer when it first came out. I try and avoid a lot of horror trailers these days because some of them are really bad at just sort of spoiling everything. But when it kind of came up, like The Invisible Man and Elizabeth Moss, and I just absolutely love her and like The Handmaid's Tale and stuff, I was like, right, okay, I'm going to watch this and see what it's like, because yeah, other kind of dark universe-y stuff's been a bit questionable. And the trailer just, oh my, it just made it look so amazing. I was so excited to see like a proper, like just really dark, scary take on a like old style monster rather than like sort of like Van Helsing style. Oh, I do love Van Helsing, but like just something proper scary. I was so excited. So I have been like hyped for this since I saw the trailer. I just thought it looked amazing and it looked really scary, and I liked the sort of the different kind of take on it, with the fact that he was like an abusive scumbag anyway, so there was a reason to be scared of him before he turned invisible, and just the whole how that added into the like the people like disbelieving her thing. I just thought I was so excited to go in it, and I don't think I've come out of a horror film in a long time and been as hyped for it as I was going in. There's so many times I go into horror films and they're like, they're good, but they're not scary, or they're just rubbish. But this one, I came out of it and I was just like, that's just one of my favorite films ever. It was just amazing. I'm so glad that the trailer did it justice and didn't spoil like all the good bits. It really just got you excited for it.
What about yourself, Dallas? What was your expectations going in and your reaction?
It's an odd one because, yeah, it's sort of, it was like ticking along, it was coming out, and I wasn't hugely excited about it, but then there was a real sort of buzz came around about a week before release, and like the reviews were all excellent. You know, I'm a huge Lee Whannell fan. I thought the original Saw is great, one of the best twists ever made, and you know, he did great work on Insidious. At that point, I think a lot of people probably expected James Wan to be like the true directing talent out of the two. Lee Whannell was more of the sort of writer, but then Upgrade, and you know, this will not be the last time I mention Upgrade at this episode, I'm sure. Upgrade was one of my favourite and most, I'm not going to say underrated because I always rate it very highly, but underseen films of the last couple of years, and I will, you know, recommend it to anyone who listens. And it showed that he's a real sort of talent, and this was a really interesting take on the story. You know, even Hollow Man did something similar, but again, that was the Invisible Man stories that were always from the perspective of the Invisible Man, and I liked the fact that it was actually on the sort of victim this time, even though Elizabeth Moss's character probably doesn't want to be called a victim, but you know, it's from her point of view. I thought it was great, and the trailer was fantastic, and I was really excited to see this, and I have to say that I was not disappointed either. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, for me, I'm kind of on the record, I'm not a big horror fan. Like, I've liked some of them and have no real strong feelings on most of them. I'd somehow managed to avoid the trailer for this one, but I was really caught in by sort of the buzz for it, and a few of my friends sort of were going, oh, I just caught it, it was really good. Because I tend to find sort of like Twitter reactions, especially to horror and comic book movies, can always be a little bit over the top and perhaps sometimes easily impressed. So I went into this movie kind of mostly excited to see sort of Elizabeth Moss. I think she can do very little wrong, and I was really blown away by the film. And I think it does what I like in horror films and sci-fi well, is that it takes kind of a modern issue. You know, we have the whole gaslighting, you know, abuse in relationships, and kind of, you know, shines a light on it and uses the genre to do that. And I thought, I nearly call it Portrait of a Lady on Fire there. The Invisible Man did a fantastic job of that. I thought the performances were great. I had some great kind of jump scares, which, you know, is very hard to get me to do sometimes. I'm usually kind of slouched in my chair, but, you know, this got me doing it. So, yeah, I thought this was really impressive, and I enjoyed Upgrade. I had no strong feelings on it, whereas this kind of gets me really excited to see what Lee Whannell does next. You know, obviously for you, Kim, we touched on this, is it takes a very sort of, you know, it's a shame to call it a modern issue, but something that's been kind of spoken a lot about in the media, you know, how women can be treated in abusive relationships, ghosting and much more. What was your take as sort of a woman horror fan of this kind of subject being kind of raised in a film? Do you think they did it well, and what were some of the strengths of doing it?
Yeah, I think they did it really well. I mean, like Dallas said, the whole thing of having like the Cecilia's focus, like the story on her rather than on the Invisible Man itself, I think was really important, so that we followed her the whole time. But what I liked was the fact that they took this issue and they didn't give us like a watered down kind of version of it. They gave us like a really nasty, probably quite realistic version of it without it ever feeling like exploitative or anything. I think just showing like how easily people who are in abusive relationships can, like, you know, cut you off from your friends and family and just make you feel like you're going a bit mad, or make you like question your own sanity and things, I think they did amazingly. And I think it's cool that they did that through a kind of horror thing of having like an invisible person. But I think a lot of the scary things in the film were just the way he treated her as a person, and he didn't necessarily have to be invisible for a lot of that. Just like seeing how he sends an email to her sister from her account while she's like not in the room, and then that's her sister's basically like done with her for a chunk of the film. It's quite terrifying to think that like people can act like that and think like that, and how quickly they can kind of like isolate you. So yeah, I think they did a really a really good job. I was really excited to see this kind of angle on it, and yeah, I'm sort of glad that they didn't shy away from the kind of harder stuff, because I think it sort of maybe shows people that maybe don't think that abusive relationships or things like gaslighting or things are a real thing, that maybe shows them that it is something that's like quite scary and does happen, and does happen to extents like this. And yeah, so I love the way that they tackled it, and I'm really glad that they sort of went for this kind of issue to draw it into the limelight, as well as giving us something scary at the same time.
Dallas, what did you make of it? The fact that, you know, when I kind of went into this film, I expected it to perhaps be a bit of an origin story of the Invisible Man and how that came to be. But as kind of Kim highlighted, the Invisible Man is very much invisible largely through the film. What did you make of this creative choice?
I thought every choice that Lee Whannell made in this film was the right one. It's a lot of them were risky, but I think it all worked perfectly. The fact that it starts with Cecilia's escape, and you know, the tension is built there. You know, you are with her every step of the way, with her trying to escape without ever actually knowing, what he has done to her. You know, a lot of Hollywood movies would have probably had maybe 10, 15 minutes of setup at the beginning where it shows him being abusive to her and stuff like that, but you never know. And the genius thing about that is you might also then question Cecilia as well, because you've never seen what apparently he has done to her, but so therefore you can start to question, you know, her, you know, as well as like the sisters and everyone else is saying, oh, did he really do this? And, you know, so is it all in her head, or did this stuff actually happen? I thought it was a great choice. You had the sympathetic cop character, which is very difficult to do, played by Aldous Hodge. I thought he was great, and I really like the fact that he was not made a love interest either, because again, some Hollywood movies would have pushed it, oh, we need to have a nice guy for her to fall in love with to get over the man. It was like, no, it was just her taking control of her life again, which I thought was fantastic. And yeah, I just thought it was really smart and really well done. The fact that there's maybe sort of two or three jump scares, there's not that many, where, and therefore it basically allowed the tension to build and build and not be dissipated by a cheap jump scare where it's a cat. Oh, it wasn't the Invisible Man, it was a cat, you know, something like that. I saw a lot of people on Twitter maybe saying it wasn't scary enough, but I thought it was made scarier by the fact it didn't have those cheap scares, and I thought it was fantastic. And the fight scenes were brilliant, I thought, towards the end. Similar to Upgrade, he can really sort of choreograph and shoot a fight scene even when you can't even see the main protagonist in it. I thought it was fantastic, and I've got more thoughts, but I'll go back to you first.
Yeah, well, we will definitely dive into some spoiler chat, because I think there's quite a few things to dive into. But Kim, you're no, you know, stranger to shock and horror and in films. What did you make of sort of the stripped back nature of the scares in this film? Was it kind of perfectly balanced for you, and did you like that choice?
Yeah, I always think like the stuff that scares me the most in horror films are the things that could like kind of really happen. Yeah, there was just like, I know it's Invisible Man, might not really happen, but it was just like the whole constant threat of him just all the time, and you're just always waiting for something to happen. So it was good to just have a couple. I think the only scare that I probably jumped the loudest at was the one right at the beginning where she like kicks the dog bowl, because you were just like so on the edge of your seat, like just willing her to get out of that house before he woke up and saw her. And there were so many good bits. There was a bit where she was like, I think it was maybe when she was like reprogramming the alarm or something, the camera just like pans around to like a empty corridor, and he's not even invisible at that point, and I was like straining to try and see like something moving in the distance. Like, I think the way they did it was brilliant. There was a bit as well that they showed in the trailer, so I knew it was coming, but where she throws the paint on him when he's in the attic hatch. Like, I'd seen that a million times. I knew it was coming, and I still jumped like right out of my seat when she threw it on him and he was right there, because I think it was just like, yeah, there was no like weird musical cue build up or anything, and it was just like kind of happened naturally during like what she was doing. It wasn't this like, oh, there's going to be a jump scare coming. It just happened and you were like, oh my god. So yeah, I loved it. I thought it was like the perfect amount of scary, just really kind of like subtle little things happened. It wasn't, yeah, it wasn't a lot of trying to make you jump for the sake of it. It was just like little creepy things added in. So yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really, really scary.
Yeah. So I just wanted to comment on Lee Whannell's use of space, the fact that it was done in widescreen and a lot of it was static shot, or that sort of pan sort of slowly left and then back again. And it basically means you are straight, yeah, like you said, you're scanning the entire frame to see where the danger is going to come from. Is anything moving? You know, is there like a footprint in the ground or like a rustle of something, of like curtains or something? You're looking for the danger constantly and you're constantly on edge. And I thought that was really, really well staged, I thought, throughout the whole thing.
So before we kind of dive into spoilers, I'd love to get your kind of take on sort of Elizabeth Moss's performance. Kim, what's your kind of thoughts on her as an actress, and what did you think of her sort of starring turn in this film?
I love her. Like, she's in one of my favourite films ever, Girl Interrupted, and I'm also like a massive fan of The Handmaid's Tale. I just think she's like a phenomenal actress. She's so good at just like looking absolutely raging without like doing much with her, like in The Handmaid's Tale, she's always like so angry at everyone, but she can't really show it or she'll get like murdered. So she's so good at just doing things like really subtly, but she's amazing at just looking like upset and terrified and crying, and she's just so good at it as well, just like looking desperate, like trying to struggle to get people to believe her. I sort of wish, I can't think of anything I've watched around where she's been having a nice time. I'd really just like to watch her in something where, just like a romantic comedy or something, where she's just having a chill time, because I always watch her getting absolutely traumatised. Like, she was in Us as well, and she didn't have a good time in that. I thought she was absolutely fantastic. Like, she was just so good. I felt like you could just imagine like what it would be like if you were in her position, and just like the absolute desperation in her to try and get people to believe her. I mean, not only on the like abusive level, but just on this absolutely like fantastical level of this guy being invisible, which she just knows is absolutely ridiculous, but she also knows like that is happening. And it's just, you could just feel like how hard it would be to be her and just trying to get people to believe you and trying to just like get away from him when you thought he'd escaped him, when she first found out he died and things. So I think she's amazing at making you really feel what the main character's feeling and really like be proper invested in her journey. I thought she was like, yeah, just absolutely fantastic. I've not seen anyone say a bad word about her acting. She was just amazing.
What did you make of Elizabeth Moss, Dallas?
I think she's someone that I don't think is capable of delivering a bad performance. I mean, like Kim says, it would be nice to see, you know, something you know, coming up where she's not victimized or terrorized the whole time. I mean, I think there's maybe one shot in this film where she does almost that cliched Handmaid's Tale ending of an episode, looking right down the character, I'm really pissed off at men sort of thing. But you know, for the rest of it, I thought she's completely believable. You buy into her story. It unfortunately, this will be probably another one of those horror performances that gets overlooked for awards, where I think when you look back over the whole year, I think her performance will be right up there compared to everyone else. And I think it's a shame that, you know, just because it's packaged within, you know, if there was a drama without the fantastical horror elements of someone being gaslighted and domestic abuse, they'd probably get a nomination. But here it won't, because it's a horror film and a Blumhouse film. But, you know, maybe Blumhouse will go all out and try and get her a nomination and play the game. But I guess we'll have to see. But yeah, no, utterly mesmerising in this.
Now, I think we'll dive into some spoilers now. And I'd really like to kind of touch on something. I can't remember if it was Kim or Dallas that said it, but when it comes to the end of the film, I think what surprised me is that I think people can come away from this and have, and I've not seen much of it play out online, which is positive, because I think people are maintaining, kind of keeping the spoiler, you know, spoiler free. But, you know, Cecilia makes a decision to kill her ex, And there's some ambiguity played about whether he did in fact, you know, was he in fact the Invisible Man and was actually just his brother, or was he a puppet master, all these sorts of things. I didn't sort of see that sort of twist coming. Well, I wasn't surprised that the brother was one of the Invisible Men, but what I liked was that they left it to the audience to decide and debate. And I wonder if it says things where you can imagine a lot of couples go and see horror films, and it would be interesting to see couples' reactions to the film and what, if they think a death is deserved, undeserved, you know, whether justice was allowed to happen. What was your guys' reaction to the end, Kim?
I loved the ending. I had weird feelings about the brother because he was a bit weird, and then he kind of went a bit normal, and then he went flat out nasty. I didn't expect it to be him in the suit when they kind of pulled his face off. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. And then at that point, I kind of questioned whether, you know, the husband had been involved at all, or had he actually like killed himself. And then when it turned out he was still alive, I was like, no, it must have been him. I feel like everything was him apart from that one fight where they actually unmasked the brother. Like, it was just so vindictive and evil and horrible. And when it came to the actual ending itself, I didn't actually really see it coming. Like, I knew that she'd stashed the other suit in the house, so I was like, is she maybe gonna make like a run for it and try and get it out and like go and show the police or whatever? I think what she did probably made a lot more sense, because I think you know, it took her so much time to even get people to believe her in the first place, and then he'd sort of managed to twist it back and make out like he wasn't part of it. I really don't think she was gonna get people to believe her a second time unless he was gonna start like terrorizing her in the suit again, which is probably very unlikely. So I think really for her to be free of him completely, that was really her only choice. I was really I don't want to say I was really happy when a guy got murdered, but like I was, because he was so nasty. Like, he's like, I think characters like him are so much more evil than loads of serial killers that you get in like horror films. He was just so vindictive, and you just got the feeling that he was literally never gonna do like stop until he got her how he wanted her. So I feel like that was what she had to do, and I'm glad that she did it in a way that she'll get away with it.
What was your thoughts, Dallas? Did the Invisible Man get his comeuppance, or did Elizabeth Moss's character of Cecilia jump the gun?
I think the ending was the right decision for her character in order for her to reclaim control over her life. It's what needed to happen, I think. She would never be free of him until he was dead. I think he needed to die for her to have that closure. You know, if it had just been, oh, you know, he was still out there in one way or another, she would never be able to be. So I completely understand, and I think it was the right thing. I like the fact that the film works as the brother could have done it the whole time. He could have been the Invisible Man the whole time and chained his brother up in the basement of the house afterwards. It totally works on both levels, and I think it's up to... I think this could be the new Midsummer, in that people will have different decisions, basically. You know, the same sort of thing was she right to burn Christian alive inside a bear? This thing will be was, well, do you think he was really bad and whatever? And I think it's a strength to... the Oliver Jackson Coen, who's like... he's really only in it for like a very tiny moment at the beginning, and then one sort of scene at the end, and to basically have the audience loathe you that much that you're really happy that it happens. It's a real skill, and I think he does it well, that, you know, he's trying to convince her and the audience that it wasn't him that did this. And I thought it played really well. In terms of spoilers, I'm really intrigued to see what people everyone else's reaction was, and their audience reaction was when the restaurant scene happened, because it got a huge reaction in my screening. People were like leaping out and just like, what, that they couldn't believe that had just happened. I was keen to see what happened with other people's screenings.
I was at a packed Saturday afternoon screening in Glasgow for it between film festival things, and I just loved it. It was just the fact it was so happened so quickly, so brutally, and it's one of those ones where, you know, we're so used to so many sort of horror movies or slasher movies where like the death toll is so large that it becomes very difficult to remember maybe a standout kill so much. Perhaps that's just maybe me, but this one was one of those ones that I could imagine for a few years of going, yeah, that shocked me, that surprised me, and I didn't see that coming. It just showed that this wasn't perhaps the Invisible Man that maybe people expected a few years ago from a Dark Universe film. This was something that was incredibly unique and a really kind of bold moment. So yeah, it was a wow moment for me and my audience. What about for you guys?
Yeah, there was a lot of like in my screen, like I actually like my mouth like proper like full on like opened. I was just like so surprised, because I think like you just thought that you thought this was like the one time they were probably safe. They're in a really crowded restaurant, there's loads of people around, you're like, what's he gonna do? And then when the knife kind of appeared, I was like, I literally had like 3 seconds to be like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? And then when he just killed her, I was like, what are you, like of all the options, like I didn't think that was gonna be it. And then she, like Elizabeth Moss, just sitting there like, I think like everyone in the audience just like absolutely unable to comprehend. I thought it was brilliant. It wasn't like a jump scare, but it made me like half jump and just take in like all this breath. It was just it's a reaction that I can't remember really having to a horror film, apart from maybe the bit in It where Pennywise comes out the projector that made a similar noise in the cinema. It was just such a like, it was just such a, yeah, such a surprise. It was yeah, I love how just like bold he went with it, and just like how the Invisible Man just clearly did not care, because he was like, well, like no one's gonna think it's me, they're just gonna turn around and see her with a knife in her hand and think it was her. It was so good. It was just like a perfect horror moment. It was amazing.
What did you make, Dallas?
Yeah, no, it was a complete shock, and I mean, I loved that moment. Yeah, my audience went absolutely crazy at that point. I mean, the detective in my head, you know, was like, well, technically, I'm sure if you actually played back the CCTV, you'd be able to see that, you know, there was a knife moving around. But clearly, the cops never did that. They just assumed that, oh, no, well, there's no need to check the CCTV. We've got loads of eyewitnesses. It's fine. But, you know, I thought it was a really sort of shocking, clever moment. And it's like, because like, she's basically sort of giving the whole plan where you think, well, you know, he can't do anything here, surely. And then, like, you see like the sister just looking off to the side, and you're like, oh, what is it? And then you just see the sort of knife almost dancing in the corner, and you're like, and then it just, it's so unexpected, I think, is the genius. You just don't expect it. It's like Randy getting killed in Scream 2. It's like in a huge public place. There's surely no way it can happen, and yet it still does. And yeah, I think that's just part of it. It just wrong fits you completely, and that's why it was so good.
Dallas, you've always been an advocate for Upgrade. It's a film you've kind of waxed lyrical about. This film has some real standout action scenes. Well, a particular action scene. How, did you get sort of the film you expected from the director of Upgrade? And what did you make of some of the action set pieces in the film?
I thought the main sort of sequence in the psychiatric hospital was fantastic. You could see he's got a sort of signature style which is starting to come through. The way that the sort of camera moves sort of with the bodies and stuff like that, I thought it was great. And I like the use of the sort of the juddering effects of his suit sort of coming, sort of almost rebooting and stuff like that halfway through, I thought was a really nice touch, because yeah, it can be difficult when you can't see the main protagonist who's doing the fighting and stuff like that. But I like the way that, yeah, it started to come through, and yeah, it reminded me of Upgrade, and yeah, Upgrade is still a 5-star film for me, and I think this one is too, actually. I think I had it at 4, but actually thinking about it again and again, I think I had some slight reservations over the ending, but they've now sort of disappeared over during this chat, and yeah, it's another 5-star film for Lee Winnell for me.
What did you make of the action scenes, Kim? For me, the scene as it unfolds in sort of this mental hospital kind of corridor, as much as it was kind of bad that all these people were being killed, I was like, yes, people will see Elizabeth Moss isn't mad. Keep doing all this stuff out in the open and stuff. It shows she's not crazy all along.
Yeah, I've not seen Upgrade, though it is on my incredibly long watch list because everyone goes on about how good it is. But yeah, no, I thought it was brilliant. I imagined it was going to be really difficult to do anything with an invisible villain because there obviously would be a really easy chance of it just looking terrible, like people fighting with themselves, like kind of chucking themselves around. And I don't think it ever really looked like that. Well, I'm just like, how strong was he? Because he took out a lot of guys with just like one punch. There was like a lot of just like absolutely decimating cops' faces with like one punch and stuff. But no, I thought it looked amazing. It was so, like you said, loads of people getting killed, but it was really fun to watch, just like all the little kind of touches and things. And yeah, when his suit kind of got damaged and he was kind of like half crackling through all the time, I think it just made it creepier. And yeah, it was a good like sort of solid kind of action chunk in the middle of a horror film. And I liked the couple of fights Elizabeth Moss had with him as well, like the one in the kitchen, just when he was like throwing her over the table and everything. And then the kind of fight at the end with a brother as well was brilliant. I think they did a really good job of doing it and not making it look terrible.
Dallas, you said you had a couple reservations about the film that have been put to rest. What were those kind of reservations?
I think it was just sort of the ending, the way it sort of, I was just sort of coming to terms with the sort of decisions that were made, and almost the fact that it had one of those sort of fake out endings. I'm sometimes not a huge fan of like a fake out ending and then knowing that there's another resolution to come and seeing how it was going to play out. But yeah, no, I think overall I thought it was a risky move, but I think it did ultimately pay off. I know there's a few people who aren't overly keen on the ending, but I think looking back at it now, I think in terms of it all justified for Cecilia's character and the way it played out, and ultimately I know I'm happy with that. There was part of my, I guess, the science part of my brain as well, sort of going, well, technically, you know, if he's in the suit, you know, well, the water would sort of ripple around him and stuff like that. You'd be able to see things bouncing off the suit, because I know he wasn't invisible. I had a feeling it was going to be a suit, and therefore if you've got a mirroring reflection on it, and then, you know, you would be able to see certain things behind him and whatever. But then that was just, you know, me trying to be pedantic and trying to figure out a flaw in the suit. But, you know, Lee Winnell already seemed to think of that already. So, yeah. It's all good.
We touched on it briefly earlier that only kind of a few years ago the Dark Universe was going to be much heralded and much hyped, with one of the more infamous kind of publicity shots of cast members all kind of coming together for this future Dark Universe shared universe, with which kind of somewhat ironically enough, with the way they've gone with this Invisible Man adaptation with the focus on domestic abuse, Johnny Depp was originally going to be cast as Invisible Man. So you know, other
alleged domestic
yes, alleged domestic abuser and scumbag Johnny Depp. Yeah, so what did you guys make of that at the time? You know, we've come kind of a very long way in terms of sort of the ethics of the casting of this film, and what I imagine would have been two very different films. What did you make of sort of the journey from, you know, much heralded shared universe to this film that we've got that seems to be somewhat independent of other films at the moment anyway? Kim?
It's weird because, like, I've not seen, like, Tom Cruise's The Mummy. I totally would watch it. I love terrible monster movies, but I just missed it when it was on Netflix. So I was quite excited about the kind of thought of the Dark Universe originally, because I do, I do love, like, monster movies like that. And I think we've had a little bit of things like Van Helsing or like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and things. It's quite cool to think of like a world where all of that exists together. So when they kind of first announced it, I was quite excited. It sounded quite cool. We get all these new films with like different takes, and yeah, have them all kind of working together in the same place sounded interesting. But then, yeah, even though I've not seen The Mummy, I don't think anyone liked it at all. So that sort of put me off a little bit. But I think with this, The Invisible Man, being like a full-on kind of horror film again, and it not feeling like a kind of cheesy monster film, like maybe some of the versions kind of in between feel like. I'm quite excited to think that they might, yeah, like take a bash at some of the other ones and give us like a scary Frankenstein film or something. We've not really had like a scary one. Or yeah, it would be really cool. Or like a proper scary mummy film as well, that's not like a kind of action adventure-y one like the ones in the 90s were, which I do really like, but it would be cool to see a proper like kind of terrifying one again. So maybe that could be about like cultural appropriation or something. If you're going to bring it in like a modern kind of theme. But yeah, I'm quite excited. I would like to kind of see them, how they're going to expand it. I like the way they kind of made the Invisible Man sort of make a bit of sense, like Dallas said, like he was an actual like scientist and this was kind of part of what he was working on already. So yeah, I think it would make sense to have other people kind of working on things and maybe accidentally like create like the Jekyll and Hyde potion or whatever. Yeah, I really like monster films. I'm always gonna go and see them, but it would be an added bonus if they were actually as scary and dark as the Invisible Man managed to make it.
What did you make, Dallas? Did you weep for the Dark Universe's failure, or did you laugh at their hubris?
I laughed at their hubris. I think this was around the time that they were announcing like 5 sequels to Fantastic Beasts before it had even come out, and I just was really annoyed with people attempting to start shared universes before one film was even out and had even proven a success. And I did enjoy the fact that they basically photoshopped all those people together into one photo. They were never in the same room. I don't believe it. And then it announced this whole Dark Universe, and then it sort of failed spectacularly. I think this Invisible Man is essentially, I mean, it's completely separate, but they're talking about doing a new Dark Universe now. But this one, with the way it's done, is essentially the more successful one than what the other ones would have been. So essentially, this is the Joker to the DC's Justice League, Man of Steel, and all that sort of thing. It's a smaller, independent version, and it's done really, really well. And I would like to see them not necessarily connect all the dots and have them all, you know, literally connected with them, you know, the Invisible Man sort of passing by Dracula or something like that, but having like Creature from the Black Lagoon being linked to climate change and doing more topical things like that. Frankenstein could be about a man who is a plastic surgeon and plastic surgery goes wrong on his wife, and he then needs to piece her back together using other bits of women, something like that. Or there was a great George Romero vampire film, I think it was called Martin, where it was about a man who thought he was a vampire and basically sort of killed people and like took blood samples from them and stuff like that. And I think something like that in this day and age, especially with, you know, like AIDS and stuff and sort of blood diseases, you could go in a really interesting way of low budget versions of these films that would kind of make sense in a modern contemporary setting, as opposed to the old gothic ones like the Stephen Moffat Mark Gatiss series, which had a couple of good episodes and then went spectacularly wrong in the final one. But yeah, that's just me. But I think, yeah, there is a place for these new versions, but I think like with films that update Shakespeare to modern times, and you know, Emma being redone as Clueless, I think they need to be updated to modern audiences' takes. I don't think you can go a classical route with them anymore. I think you would need to give them a message or something like that these days. And if Blumhouse are the people to do it, I think they probably are, given their track record. I think I would like to see them given the keys to the Dark Universe kingdom and see what happens to it. Jason Blum can be the new Kevin Feige and always wander around in a baseball cap.
So do you guys have any final thoughts on The Invisible Man?
Yes, I do. The one disappointment I did have with it, actually I forgot and I have written it down, was the fact that this film did not go straight into Queen's The Invisible Man at the end credits. I think that would have made it a 5-star masterpiece. It would have been completely and not in keeping with the rest of the film, but it would have been like one of those Asian films where there's a really dour ending and then it just goes straight into like a K-pop upbeat song. I think that would have been, it would have been 5-star masterpiece if it had been Queen's Invisible Man at the end.
Fair play. And for you yourself, Kim, any final thoughts?
I just don't have anything bad to say about this film. Like, I just absolutely adored it. And I think it's going to be one of those ones that will be really fun to watch again and again, because you will always be like kind of looking out for different stuff. I don't think it's ever going to kind of stop being a bit scary. And yeah, I just loved everything about it. So I'm super excited to see kind of what else Lee Whannell does. I've loved a lot of things that he's been involved with, not necessarily directed, but like the Saw films, and like Dead Silence is one of my favourite films ever. So yeah, I'm super excited to see what else he directs and see if he can manage to keep it up.
What I loved about this film, and I want to see kind of continue, and I think Blumhouse are so effective at doing it, is like the budget for The Invisible Man was £9 million, which is quite staggering in this climate. And if they had gone with their original plan of a Johnny Depp sort of movie, he commands like £55 million for like a film, which is, you know, I understand the economics of it. Do I approve of it? Not necessarily, but I think there's a way to go that this film is all the more interesting for giving it to talented actors and talent behind the screen and just being playful with it, instead of spending all this money on shootout scenes or action scenes, just really paring it down. And I think we got a film that's, you know, I think was universally adored by all three of us, which is pretty rare. So go The Invisible Man.
Yeah, I think Johnny Depp, if it had been him, he probably would have been like a version where he is viewed as invisible by society. You know, no one pays any attention to him, so he becomes invisible and then goes on this rampage of revenge via this internet or something stupid like that. I think it would have been that kind of movie, and it would have been a much worse movie than the one we got. So
we always kind of like to pick out a wee weekly recommendation of a film to check out, or a podcast, book, song, music video, you name it. So The Invisible Man is something we would recommend people to check out. But Kim, what would you recommend people check out this week?
So this week I've picked a film called Escape Room, which came out in 2019, directed by Adam Robitel. I'm telling you all that because there is about 17 films called Escape Room, so this is to make sure that you watch the correct one. It's sort of like all these random six people get invited to participate in an escape room thing where they can win, I can't remember how much money, but a lot of money if they survive till the end, basically. And they all kind of come along and take part. And it's sort of very Saw-ish in that all the different sections of the escape room are basically designed to kill you if you don't solve the puzzle quick enough. And I kind of went into it thinking it was going to be a bit rubbish, but it's actually like really fun, and the kind of escape room set pieces were all really interesting, and I actually found myself like quite invested in a lot of the characters. So yeah, I would say it looks like it's going to be kind of cheesy, and yeah, I think there's like one on Netflix just now that's a different version, and there's a couple of other older ones that because I keep reading people on Twitter were like, oh, I tried to watch Escape Room and watched the wrong one by mistake. So it's the 2019 Adam Robitel one. It's actually really good. Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. And if you like Saw and like seeing people get caught up in traps because of things that happened to them in their past, then this is definitely the film to watch.
How do you follow that one, Dallas?
Oh, I don't know, because yeah, I was actually just looking on IMDb to figure out which escape room one I've seen, and I've seen two of them. And yes, no, the one you picked was the more enjoyable one, but apparently there's now also Escape Room 2. No, Escape Room, Escape Room, Escape Room, The Lone Survivors, Escape Room, Game, Set, Match. I'm like, wow. I mean, escape rooms I didn't think escape rooms existed before like last year, so how they made films about it in 2017, I have no idea. But I'm going to go completely the opposite way, and I'm going to choose a film from, I think it was the year 2000 and or 1999. It was In the Mood for Love by Wong Kar-wai. Stars Maggie Cheung and Tony Leung, and it's about a couple, well, not a couple, two separate people, but their spouses are having an affair, and then they are drawn together and contemplate having an affair together as well, but ultimately decide it'd be the wrong thing to do. And it's about forbidden love, romance. It's one of the first foreign language films I ever saw, and back in 2000, and it sort of introduced Asian sort of cinema to me, and it was just one of my sort of favorite films. The soundtrack is absolutely incredible, and it's all done sort of with strings and violins. And I'm just going to pull the name up of the person, because he also did the soundtrack for A Single Man with Colin Firth, and I just need to recommend that. But it's currently on Mubi at the moment, along with his other film 2046, which is not as good, but it's still very good. It's a Shigeru Umebayashi who does the soundtrack, and it's just amazing. It's just one of the most beautiful sort of love stories I've ever seen, failed love stories I've ever seen, and it's highly recommended. So you can catch it on Mubi at the moment. I think it's probably on for about another sort of 10 days or so because of the Mubi system, where you've got 30 days to watch them. So yeah, if you do have Mubi, go check it out. If not, it's available on DVD in the UK as well.
So I want to continue to see Elizabeth Moss suffer, and I recommended one of the best films of the past few years, and that's Her Smell. So it's Elizabeth Moss takes on a sort of Courtney Love style character called Becky Something, whose band experiences brief fame but is broken up by her self-destructive behavior. So the film is told over five parts, where we just kind of see her life and band completely fall apart as she kind of embraces drink and drugs. It is one of the most stressful and anxiety-maddening films I've kind of ever watched. At one point, I genuinely thought I was going to have to leave the cinema because it was that stressful to watch. But Elizabeth Moss puts in a fantastic performance. So whatever she's learning at the School of Scientology or something like that, they are doing a great job with her. So yeah, Her Smell, it's coming on to Sky Cinema. So you can get it on there or Now TV, which is always good for a free 7-day kind of, you know, rental or something like that. So definitely check out Her Smell.
I can't believe that we've gone this whole way and talking about Scientology and not talked about the fact that in this movie, in The Invisible Man, she plays someone who is unable to escape a very controlling person or society that basically tells him what to think and what to do. So, I can't believe we haven't made that. Allegedly, of course. Yes.
So thank you very much to everyone for tuning in, and thanks to you guys for joining me to chat about The Invisible Man, and we will be back next week. Until then, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.